Hey there, treasure hunters. If you enjoy what the Ironbound Chest does, please consider leaving a rating and a review on iTunes. Doing so helps to spread the wealth inside of the Ironbound Chest to other listeners, adventurers, and fellow treasure hunters. Thank you, and enjoy the show. You're listening to the Ironbound Chest. Our topic for discussion this month is First Times, and today, we're sitting down with Johnny, Dungeon Master for Earth's Embers. Let's add some wealth to the chest.
Hello, listeners. Thank you for opening the Ironbound Chest. My name is Austin Moraga, and today I'm joined by Johnny, the Dungeon Master for Earth's Embers podcast.
Hello, pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me, as I said before we started recording, man. So before I get going, I want to ask you, like I want to ask all my guests, how are you doing? How are you doing this week?
I'm good, thank you. Very busy. I'm a school teacher, so the day job keeps me horrendously busy in light of current events. But yeah. Generally pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Busy myself for other reasons. I'm not, I don't have an illustrious career like a school teacher, but starting this podcast is definitely busy.
Oh, it's crazy amounts of work, isn't it? Because you're a lone gunman like me, kind of one-man show behind the scenes.
Exactly. And I actually want to get into your, as you said, lone gunman stuff for you, because I am absolutely impressed by the stuff that you guys got going on Earth's Embers. So besides how have you been, I want to ask you is a golden question I used to call it my absolute question, but now I'm calling it my golden question. And that golden question is, what do you treasure most about D&D?
I think the easy answer is the chaos. That really draws me in. I think it's great stories with great friends. I think, like everyone, I love storytelling and being able to tell it collaboratively with friends or strangers. It's a unique and beautiful experience. I'm going to go with collaborative storytelling.
One of my past guests, we had talked a little bit about that, how it's definitely, at least in my eyes, about how D&D or even other TTRPGs is almost an evolution of storytelling in terms of what we do with it and how we can, you know, create, even though they might be false, made up stories, it's definitely stories that people hold dear, definitely. I mean, if you look at things like Critical Role or even other really popular podcasts, people really cling to those stories and really cherish them because they are such a powerful way of storytelling, you know?
Oh, you're so right. And it goes further than that from a literary point of view as well. If we look at our storytelling tradition, we've always had the hero's journey, if you like, a series of narrative points that you can put in almost any narrative from any culture around the world. And yet D&D sort of subverts that by that's the overarching plot. But we, as I said, the kind of the chaos of the storytelling means that the fun is that we're not always predicting what's going to happen next. We know if it was a film, the hero would do this. But then our player characters say, no, I would like to headbutt the door, please. And you end up going in some completely different tangent. And I think that's what's really fun is that it's unexpected and yet familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more there. And I hope we get into, again, what we were talking before we recorded of some, I don't want to spoil anything for the listeners, but just some of the actions that your characters took within your first season is so good. And just for listeners, I really want to tell you, if you haven't listened to Earth's Embers, which I hope you have, but if you haven't, find them on Spotify or wherever you can, pretty much wherever you can find podcasts, right?
Yeah, we're on every provider that I could find.
Good. Well, that's fantastic. But absolutely check them out. Listen to them. You will not be disappointed. Definitely, I do want to get into sort of that, like you said, that chaos. But it's so good. And I think it's a constant with most, if not all, D&D groups or even other TTRPG groups, that everyone at some point or another, without fail, has had that chaotic moment that is maybe a defining point in their game.
Oh, God.
That just really, this is when they know, like, they love this. You know, they love D&D. They love tabletop role playing games, you know.
Well, we have I go to a local club on Thursday nights, or I used to before all this started, and we've all been locked down. And they're a really nice bunch, my local guys. And we've got a player called Nathan. Hello, Nathan, if you're listening. Who is the Lord of Chaos incarnate. He is the most chaotic player I've ever met. I don't think he's ever played a vanilla race. He always tries to find the most obscure race and obscure class. And not at all to be an edgelord or, you know, to be pushing any boundaries. But just he finds those characters compelling. And then he will just play them so well that he ends up doing mad things. So he ended up being a dragonborn paladin who was sworn to Bahamut, who then ended up with an orb of Tiamat inside him somehow, don't ask. And he ended up essentially the house we'd got to, or the town we'd got to, sorry, there was a temple, and we were supposed to enlist the aid of the clerics because there was an evil necromancer, you know, standard stuff. And he'd kind of gone away from the party. And he managed to accidentally start a fight with every single cleric in the temple, which we don't know if it's caused a TPK yet because the session ended and that was the last session before lockdown. But, you know, that's just normal for Nathan. This is the guy that when I was running an Eberron campaign in Sharn and, you know, City of Towers, narrow walkways, he said, yeah, I'd like to be a centaur, please. It's just, I love the guy. Oh, and man. I think that's really indicative of the chaos that is fun. I said it trips us up and keeps us guessing.
Absolutely. That's really I love that story, the Lord of Chaos. It's so good. I would say I have a Lord of Chaos at my table. The most he's been chaotic is he is, funny enough, also a dragonborn paladin. And the guy who plays him, so great, but there is another player who they've been butting heads a little bit as their characters, which is great. I totally, you know, am all for that. The Dragonborn Paladin, his name is Hunter, was able to create a fan club of pretty much, I'll say it, adolescent dwarven females. And the person that the fan club was for was a snooty high elf who is basically subverting this fan club into his own personal army a little bit. And it's just been so chaotic, so like off the wall for me. And as a DM, you know, you gotta roll with it. And it's like, you really lessen an experience if you don't roll with something like that. And if you don't invite yourself into that chaos.
Absolutely. So the best moments of any plot came out of chaos. I mean, you alluded to season one of our show. And that absolutely happened. I said I played season one with some really good friends. Because I think, like everyone, I said, I might as well do a podcast. And then those guys were really kind to volunteer their time. And it got chaotic very quickly. I was kind of laughing, thinking, well, you know, we've played video games together for years. We've hung out for years. We've played board games together for years. I'm sure that when I give them a D&D plot, they'll gravitate towards the story fairly naturally. And then at every single turn, they seem to take a perpendicular turn away from it. And I actually think that makes season one really beautiful, because it's kind of one of the themes mm-hmm. of our show is that each season is self-contained, but the players of the next season, their actions and the world they're living in, the world state is altered by the events of the previous series. So the misdirections in season one actually just set up where the world's going fantastically. And I think that was something I could not have planned.
I don't think you mention in the beginning that each season is self-contained or anything, because I think you guys just get and go,
yeah,
don't you?
I think it's kind of in the blurb on the website, and me being, I mean, I'm slightly older. In our generation, everyone just went to a newsletter or a website, but I know that's kind of not really the kitsch thing now. But I just kind of assumed people would pick it up, really, which is sort of quite naive of me. So I think I mention it a little bit more going forward.
I do want to come in here and say you mentioned your website. I have been to that website, and that's one of the things I want to say is that I am absolutely floored by that thing.
Oh, thank you kindly.
Did you create it? Is it?
Yeah. No. When I said I'm a one-man show, I really mean it. It's every single thing on the podcast, obviously apart from all the wonderful players who, you know, make the show. But all the behind scenes stuff is just me in my office.
Is that hard to do with you being a school teacher? I mean, I know, I guess the quarantining and everything going on right now, you probably have more time, but I'm sure you made this before all that happened. Was it very hard to kind of balance those two things?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, really hard. I would say, you know, because I'm sure any other teachers listening out, we will kind of wryly laugh when people say, oh, are you guys doing less now? We're working like twice the hours to try and keep up with online learning for kids, but that's a whole other podcast. The D&D stuff, I think I've been lucky. My background was that I was a musician for about 15, 18 years. And wow. So the thing about the independent music scene is there's no money. You have to do everything yourself. And, you know, I'd been in bands with some of my other best friends and done all that stuff. And we'd always made our own websites, made our own t-shirts, printed our own albums, you know, done it all by hand. So that kind of ethos fed over quite nicely. I'm a freelance composer still in my very kind of shrinking spare time. So I kind of built a website for myself for that before. And luckily, I mean, I'm going to say I used Wix. I like Wix. It's cheap. Nice. Things are easy to make. And I think if I'm not trying to be too over the top, then you can make things look quite good by keeping things simple.
I mean, your website definitely is very simple. And again, listeners, please go to it because you will find a treasure of content there. I looked on it. You have some of your homebrew. You do a lot of, obviously, with your campaign being homebrew, but you have stuff on the DMs Guild, Dungeon Masters Guild. You have ready out of the box one shots. I saw even there, you even have t-shirts, man.
Yeah, well, yes. I think it's Kevin Smith, the amazing director and filmmaker, once said, if you act like you deserve to be somewhere, people will treat you like you deserve to be there.
It's a great quote.
He's such an inspirational guy because he always says, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it. I think the thing I learned in my increasing years, I should say, is that just do something and then why hold back? I figure I might as well do it all. I'm not expecting everyone to buy anything or, you know, I'm not trying to be bigger than Critical Role or anything. I'm just trying to have fun. And I think, oh, that would be kind of cool. Would I like it? If I would like it, I'll stick it on the website.
Definitely a good question to ask yourself whenever going with something new. Well, speaking about like, would I like it? The main topic for this month is first times. And I think we could definitely blend what we were just talking about into, would I like it? What about you? What was the first time for you experiencing D&D or other tabletop role-playing games that made you go like, would I like this?
That's actually a really good question. I think the very first time I played Dungeons & Dragons, I'm assuming it was 4E. I say assuming because I really, it was a case of the blind leading the blind. And I'm from a very small town in England and very gatekeepery in every kind of niche sense. So something like D&D, I mean, most of the population of the town couldn't read, so it wasn't something we could really do. I mean, being slightly mean, I think. But it's not the kind of culture that would have come easily to us. We grew up in the 90s where to be a geek was really uncool. And those of us that liked rock music and video games were still considered pariahs, which is sad, really. So I didn't try it until I was 23. It was my 23rd birthday. I bought the starter set, which was just in a huge bookshop over here, brought it home and I unboxed it. I was living with my best friend and his girlfriend at the time, now wife, and we just filled out all these character sheets and we had some other friends over for my birthday and I tried reading the adventure out and we just did it completely wrong and we had fun. And then we kind of put it aside and I didn't really think about it for years. And then I kind of just got thinking about it again about 4 years ago, going, God, I would really like to play. But it wasn't until 2 years ago where I was driving to visit my brother and I needed a podcast to just get me through that. And on iTunes, they'd recommended How Friends Roll, which is, if people haven't heard it, an awesome podcast that I've stolen a lot of ideas from, namely the kind of short form, each season is self-contained and they kind of feed into each other. And the great thing about How Friends Roll was it's a show where the first season has people who've never played D&D before. So as part of the show, he sort of explains the rules as he goes along. And after 10 hours of, you know, there and back visiting my brother, I thought, I could do this. I just need an opportunity. And then our littlest brother ended up getting grounded kind of for quite a long time. So I said, well, why don't I DM something for us online? And it's a chance to, you know, try it out. So I got Lost Minds of Phandelver. The friend I'd been living with, he joined in as well. And we kind of started to get that going. And then that just, you know, classic D&D story, that fell apart.
Yeah.
And then it was really this podcast. I just went, no, I'm just going to do a podcast. I'm going to get some guys in over one weekend. And it just kind of snowballed from there. From there, I met the guys at the local club. And I've been playing solidly for about 18 months now. But really, that's it.
In 18 months, you've done all this? My God.
Why you gotta
That's
be
incredible. Well, you're talking about your friends. Again, listening to the podcast, is that the first time that they were played? Because it does seem like you do have to explain a few things for them, which is great, obviously, for listeners too, getting into D&D podcasts. You know, not everyone who starts listening to a D&D podcast is very knowledgeable about everything.
Sure. And actually, I quite like the behind the scenes stuff. I know that, you know, people, once we know all the rules, it's a bit frustrating if you have to hear someone explain what's advantage again. But actually, more people don't play D&D than do. And another Kevin Smith quote, which I love, is every show is someone's first time listening. And so, you know, you can't feel bad about answering the same question again and again or going over something, because if you can help inspire one person or get one person in, then you've done a great job. And the guys, they play with their cousin Dan, who's in our homebrew campaign as well that we do offline. They'd played 4E before with him, but they hadn't played 5E, so that was kind of where a lot of the rules come in. But even then, they weren't they kind of played as hobbyists, but not every week, every day for years kind of serious players.
Well, it definitely seems like you've really roped your players into this podcast in a good way. You've roped them in. Could you tell me and the listeners just a little bit about your group, who they are and who they play?
Sure. Oh, cool. Well, season one is made up of Sean, Ryan and Dan, and they play Grilius the Barbarian, played by Ryan. We've got Lady Clearwater, played by Sean, who is a half elven rogue, and Brad played a warlock, Armith Botek. And season two is, like, I've got to thank my cast for season two as well. Then they are my friends now, but at the time they were people that I kind of put the shout out after season one, because we the lockdown had started and the cast I'd had in mind for what I thought would be season two couldn't meet up and record because we live all over the country. And so I thought, right, well, I'm stuck at home, why don't I put the shout out online and just I'd like to get some US players and just why not try it. And so I've got to thank Kevin first, who had been a fan of season one, and he said, yeah, can I take part? And you know, he's such a good role player. If you listen to season two, he plays Linabel, the dwarven paladin, and just out of this world. And then you had Shannon Roby, who, if you don't know, everyone should add on Twitter, because she is, as far as I'm concerned, the nicest person in D&D. And she helped me hook me up with the other people, which was Sean, who is the DM for Paradise RPG, of which Shannon is also in, and Patricia, who is PML, who runs PayPalchemy, making D&D terrain. And they're just the loveliest people, and they came together for season two and did a great, very different style campaign. Season one was very much friends messing around and kind of having a laugh. Season two, they decided to roleplay the entire thing 100% of the time, and it was really intense and just so good. So I've been really blessed with both seasons so far to have two fantastic casts.
Well, like I said before, I am so greatly enjoying season one, and I'm really, it's, I know it's not the longest season, but it's definitely a very enjoyable one. And I would love to hear more of their adventures, if that's ever going to be a possibility. And I would love to hear more of them.
But you know, I keep saying to the guys, hey, let's just stream our Eberron campaign, because it's basically the exact same guys plus Dan, who is a really experienced player and such a lovely guy. And I have so much fun doing those, because we've really got into the stride with 5e now. And so it's just pure chaos with slightly different characters. But I think that we also do like doing something that is off the radar, because those guys run their own podcast as well, looking at kind of creating film scenarios. They produce a podcast called Slash Dupe that's really funny. So I recommend listening to that as well.
Maybe I can get them on sometime.
I'm sure they'd love to.
I am definitely enjoying season one, and I'm really looking forward to season two to see how it all plays out with on both ends, you know. But with those two, did you homebrew both of those campaigns?
Yeah, so season, my own personal criticism of where the show's at so far is that the world's very black and white. Because as I said, I was a brand new DM, and I think handling the kind of political intrigue and the deeper things that I love in other shows takes a little bit of experience of the system. So I kind of wanted to set up a good versus evil story right from the off. And then my players managed to completely miss that story and go in a new direction in season one. And that kind of had me reimagining things.
Chaos, man, chaos.
I love it. I mean, I do genuinely love it, but it keeps you on your toes as a writer. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to create this world. So I created the world of Eliasaria, which is actually really a country. As you said on the website, I did like an entire history of all the regions and the town, kind of like 5,000 years. And then I just sat down and went, this isn't enough, this is too limiting, you know, in the light of all the discussions on Twitter about race and racial stereotypes in D&D, and, you know, how can we do better? I thought, I've not set out to be biased in any way, shape or form, but I do have a responsibility to make sure that I'm being fair and representing the world. I'm of mixed heritage myself. I'm not just English. In fact, I'm barely English according to a genetic study.
Huh.
So I really wanted to embrace my Indian heritage and my Italian heritage more and create the wider world. So I've actually, since season two, created Erionwel, which is kind of Eliasare is one country now in this world. And I'm currently building the world, which is taking a long time. Precisely because I did want to flesh it out. And the idea is that all the campaigns are happening in this world concurrently, or within kind of 6 months of each other. But it's a bit of work.
Eliasare, and excuse me if I'm saying that, Eliasare?
Eliasare, yeah.
Eliasare, yeah. That's, you said a country. Now, does the world itself have a name?
Yes, Erionwel.
Erionwel. God, that's beautiful. I love that. Obviously, you love to world build, yes?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, perfect, because we can have a discussion about that, my friend. I also love the world build, and I know how time-consuming it can be. And I know how sometimes when world building, you can have days where you are at the keyboard and you are just flying, coming up with stuff left and right, and it all just flows. And then other days, like writer's block, you just hit a brick wall and it just stops though.
Yeah.
To me, I love to world build, even though I'm not the most knowledgeable about all the fields of world building, because you get into everything. You are literally building a world, and you can be as fleshed out as you want to. And Eliasare is just as a country, from all that I've seen on your website, is beautifully thought out.
Oh, thank you kindly.
I want to know, though, do you remember the first time you got into world building? What was like the first thing that you may have world builded as maybe a child or even as an adult?
Oh, God. I can't remember the name of it, but I do remember as a boy, I was an only child for the first 10 years of my life. I'm 10 and 17 years older than my next two brothers. So I spent a lot of time on my own in my room. And I think like many tabletop fans, I loved fantasy books.
Oh, yeah.
I just read endlessly. And I think it started with just drawing maps and playing Lego. And my earliest memory is kind of listening to audiobooks and playing Lego in my mum's house. Oh. Just creating these worlds, which, do you know, bizarrely, were nearly always love stories. And I think it kind of grew from that. Then I draw maps and just imagine what places could be in this map and who would the people be that lived there. I can't remember the first solid one that I did, because it's just something I've always sketched out and done along the way. I would say Eliasare is probably the first organized attempt I've had outside of, you know, half-written novels and things like that through the years that always just get put on the back burner.
Hearing you talk about that definitely was having me have flashbacks to being in my woods in my backyard, and I had little groves that I would go with my little notebooks and stuff. And I also started with map making as well. And I would just sketch out forest path and little forts here and there, and just imagine that, you know, what took place like in my own fantastical history of my simple backwoods, that just expanded my love for creating and world building and, you know, just having that whimsical imagination. And I would say I miss it, but I mean, I still do it. It's just that kind of nostalgic feel for me anyway.
I think that the capturing that, there's when I left school at 16, I got this amazing book given to me and my friends called The Art of Zen Guitar. And it's this slightly philosophical music practice book that talks through the art of, you know, when you first pick up an instrument, the thing that really strikes your heart is just making a cool noise. And then you sort of fixate on getting better and better. And eventually you lose that and possibly become a bit of an elitist or a snob. And they say that the art of getting back to passing black belt is actually to return to white belt and not think about it and play with a child's joy. It's just that now you know what you're doing. And I think my approach to trying to build stuff is kind of turn off the world and not worry about politics or how something might be viewed, and just go, I'm just going to make something that I think is really cool. Oh, and then afterwards, I'll look at it and see how I can make sure that it fits in and it is okay and that I haven't put any horrible biases in it or something.
Yeah.
When I was at uni, we called that the difference between the creative brain and the editor, that it's really natural for us creative types to instantly go to the editor in the middle of it. You mentioned writer's block. earlier, and that's something that crops up a lot. As a teacher, people say, you know, sir, how do I get over writer's block? And I say, there's no such thing as writer's block. What you've got right now is an unreasonable expectation that what you're going to create is good. Sometimes you just need to do something bad. Just write the bad song, write a bad line, write something cheesy, and you know what? Go back and edit it later when you've kind of fleshed out the other bits. I think that approach has helped me because it's all done from a sense of childlike wonder. I won't claim competence, but I've got the childlike wonder down.
Yeah, I think childlike wonder can and is a big part of D&D and TTRPGs, and absolutely lends itself to what, you know, you do as a DM, and even, you know, what your players do in game, you know, and even listeners can experience that childlike wonder of just listening to people have fun at a table, you know, through their headphones. Yep. And listening to the chaos, like we've been saying so much time now, the chaos, but also the absolute joy that everyone on each end is experiencing. And it's just fantastic.
It's the thing I love about listening to D&D podcasts or just any kind of creative podcast is I like other people's creativity. I think we're always looking for things to unify us as a culture or as a species or as a whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that can still unify us is stories and the joy of sharing them together. And, you know, I think I'm someone that would rather light a candle than curse the darkness. And in these troubled times, there's so much that we can share that's positive, that can help build bridges and build understanding. And I think we've just got to make the most of those tools.
So you're a teacher.
Yes.
What do you teach?
I teach music. Oh. So I teach at a secondary level for English people. So for Americans, that's 11 to 16.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to say you do the music for your intros.
Yes.
I have not been able to get that song out of my head. It is so good.
Oh, thank you.
I want to ask, is there a full-length version? Because I need more of that song, man.
I mean, there can be. It was something something that I've been toying with is, I think we all do it as creatives, don't we? We look at other people's shows and we go, I want to do that. That looks cool. Yeah. And it was the season one How Friends Roll theme. It was just amazing. And then I don't know if you've listened to Dungeons and Daddies.
Yes, I have.
Such a great show. And obviously their theme's fantastic as well. And so I kind of a joke among all my friends and my students, actually, that I'm kind of fundamentally incapable of writing happy music. I have no idea why. It's just that whenever I create music, I just like sad stuff. It feels really nice to me. So I kind of made this sad, minor, folky thing. I showed it to the guys and they went, oh, that's classic, Johnny. You're not going to bother then. Is that what we're stuck with? I was like, yeah, sorry, guys. I was kind of going, oh, if they like it, maybe I could make a full-length version. And they went down on it, but it's kind of by the book for me, I think. I think they were annoyed because the season two theme's really upbeat and kind of rocky.
Again, I haven't listened to season two yet, but I didn't know it had changed though. But I'm even now, just my excitement for season two is growing more and more.
Yeah, that's what I do, man. Change it up.
Yeah, well, it's good though. But you definitely have my vote if you want to make a full length song because it is a beautifully written piece. I will say that. I'm not as probably learned as you in music. I was a self-taught musician. My father taught me a lot as I was growing up himself being musician. But I'll just piggyback on what you're saying of like, I also like sad sounding music, you know, sad sounding tones and even lyrics, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Just I live in the minor key. It's just home.
I definitely love it. And listeners, again, just please go listen to Earth's Embers podcast.
Well, the music's on the website as well, which is, I put the little player up there.
You have three other songs I think I saw in there.
Yep. So it's three. There's the season one intro, which is also the outro. And then season two, I did an intro and an outro where I sort of sat down and thought, okay, well, I've done the sad folky thing. What can I do? I think it sounds... because I had the Americans on and Patty, who's Mexican, you know, America's slightly more well known for having higher budgets and things being a bit more polished than British productions. We're a little bit tying things together with bootstraps. So I thought, okay, I've got to actually pull my finger out. What can I do? What's the most American thing that kind of speaks to me of my childhood? And for me, it's 80s cartoons, you know, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Hero Turtles, maybe which one, Power Rangers, like all that stuff. Like the theme tunes just kick. I'm like, right, I'm gonna do my best to do an 80s 90s rock intro in kind of in honor and homage for my friends joining.
That's so really thoughtful too, though, to, you know, you as a creative mind to be like, you know what, I don't have to do this, but because you care so much about those around you, especially in the in your podcast, that you take the time to do that. And that's fantastic.
Well, I hope so. I've tried. There were such lovely people that it's easy to go out of your way when you're working with good people.
Do your students ever listen to your podcast, or do you tell them about it?
Oh no. the disadvantage of the age I work with is, and the job now in England, is we have to be very careful about what we share. And although there's nothing bad on the podcast at all, you know, I'm proud of the work, it's just it's a side of me that the kids don't know about. Ironically, I've got a bit of a Professor Snape energy at school.
Oh no.
At least among the junior students, they tend to see me as I'm not particularly popular. I don't think it's unfair to say that. Once the seniors kind of take my classes, they kind of tend to get that it's an act and that it's fine. And as long as they do the work, I'm cool with them. I've worked in a lot of rough schools through my years, and it's kind of taught me to be a bit of a disciplinarian and, you know, control in the classroom first. And then you can actually get to the business of teaching and having fun and chilling out. But it's got to come from a place of respect first. So the idea of them seeing, hey, Johnny, is just mad to me, because they are so used to Mr. DiGirolamo, who will, you know, make sure they're facing the front and listening and all that boring stuff we have to do.
The real straight-laced stuff.
I mean, it makes my friends laugh no end. Sean's always said that if he ever saw me in the classroom, he thinks he would actually die of laughter.
Because, oh no.
My teacher persona is just, well, it's that. It's a persona to make sure that the kids are safe, that they're doing the best they can. You know, I really care about their outcomes, but also right. That I'm safe and that the boundaries stay professional, because that's really important.
Boundaries, especially in teaching, is very important when you're around, you know, young children. Their minds are still formulating, their emotions are maybe on different wavelengths, and it's kind of hard to control them. And having that, and I'll go back to what I said, straight-laced kind of attitude, what you said, Professor Snape ish yep. kind of character is very helpful, even though they may not like it and you probably don't like to do it. It is definitely helpful.
I'm trying to relax as I get more experience. Yeah, I've been teaching 12 years now, and it just surprises me. I'm trying now. I've been at the same school for about 7 years, and it's an amazing school. I love it. Work with really good people. The kids are really nice. I've kind of got to the point where the reputation's ingrained, so I don't need to keep reinforcing it, which is nice. So I'm trying to be a little bit more laid back, because, you know, at the end of the day, kids are human beings too, and they do respond more to positive relationships. But I think it's kind of like parents, isn't it, essentially, that, you know, your parents should be your friends, but actually they're your parents first and foremost.
Absolutely.
And, that's kind of what we have to try and do.
For my son, he just turned 3, and I love him to death, and I've mentioned this on a past episode, but he does get into a lot of trouble, especially at a very young age of 3. You know, they're still very much a formulating mind.
Absolutely.
It's very hard for me to be very harsh on him, because I love him to death. But you have to. You have to have that rearing of the child, even though it might be uncomfortable for you and them. But you have to have those teaching moments of being Professor Snape, like you said, or being a very harsh person that in the long run does help. But going to, you know, what you said, you know, like your experience as this teacher for, you said 12 years, incredible for one. But do you find that, you know, being a teacher lends itself to your DMing in any way? Like, you know, the way you control, because you can probably control a room, you're a teacher, you know, does that lend itself to D&D and what goes on there?
I think it does to an extent. If I'm really honest, Russell Brand once said, I've not got the kind of personality to not be famous. If I wasn't famous, I would just be a wanker. And I sort of agree with that to a point. In regards to myself, I just always wanted to perform. I loved it. So when I was young and I was on stage and I was touring and all that stuff, that just felt right. And teaching's just an extension of that. Obviously, you know, the kids are the priority, but I love standing up and talking to people. It's just fun for me. So I like being able to, control the room. I like to see it more like a musician, that we're in this together. And in this moment, I'm just the conductor. And actually, I'd say the same as DM. You know, my job's to make sure that everyone's playing in tune and in time. But they're running the show. They're the soloists. I'm just there to give them the context in which they can show off and have fun. It's definitely helped. But just, I said, like in school, I think the management stuff just helps me because I don't think I'm very good with people socially. It's been a long journey to which I owe my wife much in teaching me to read other people's emotions. And I think teaching has helped that a lot. That it does help me kind of sense the room and sense where people are at and know when to let something lie. You know, maybe don't tell the joke for the fifth time in the row because no one laughed at the fourth time, and things don't get funnier with repetition. But I think just being a natural show off has sort of been the biggest thing.
I'm really glad to hear that, though, because I think that just from hearing your, you know, your voice, you're very calm, you know, you're very soft spoken. And you're obviously, again, probably as a teacher because of this, but like, you know, your narration and your diction, I find listening to your podcast really increases the experience of you being, you know, curator of your world and this, and the dungeon master and everything like that, though. So, and I guess I'm just pumping you up, giving you a lot of positives here, but it's just, it is really good, though. I do love it. And I've said other people's this before on past interviews, though, but like everyone in this community that, you know, we are a part of, the tabletop role-playing game community, podcasters, streamers, all of them are fascinating, fabulous people. And yeah, they are also so, so goddamn creative.
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
They each have their own wonderful facets that I want to give to the world. And so I just find what you do incredible. Being, like you said, being a school teacher, and especially your website, the music you do, the world building, it is something I could dive into and get lost in. And I just love it.
Well, I was, I sort of realized early on that I, in my music career as well, that I was never going to be amazing at any one thing. You know, I'd never have the rules knowledge of, say, you know, a Matt Mercer, or the performance ability of, say, a Laura Bailey, or the musical ability of a Lawrence Chapman. So I thought, well, be a jack of all trades, a classic bard. Yeah. Do a little bit of everything, and the things you don't shine at, you can kind of cover up with the other things. Just, you know, keep distracting them with something new, and they won't see how crap you are.
I want to say I'm right there with you. I guess I would also consider myself a jack of all trades. I also had that feeling at a young age, like, you know what? I do enjoy playing music, writing, in this and that, but in no way am I a master or ever think I'm going to be a master. And so that's kind of how I have all of my different hobbies that have all led into this podcast and the people that I have around me. You're not the only one I have interviewed now that said everyone on this other podcast, Dungeon Dads, shout out to you guys.
Well, I just listened to their episode actually about 4 hours ago, thinking, oh god, I need to make sure I've listened to it ahead of time. Really good. I really enjoyed it.
Good. And they themselves said them too, like, they are a jack of all trades, which I'm beginning to see a pattern a little bit of people who are into D&D and the tabletop role-playing games. It, because it is such an open avenue for so many different hobbies and skills and trades, you know? And again, you as a teacher, you can definitely use all of those skills as a DM. And I don't think there's, unless you can give me an example of something as a teacher that doesn't really lend itself to what you do on your podcast.
Well, I mean, can't really give people detention when they don't listen to the show, which is a shame. But aside from that, I think the only thing I'm rubbish at is art, which is ironic because literally every single member of my family is an actual artist. My brother is an artist for Sumo Digital. He's been working on the Sackboys adventure, which is coming out for PS5. And it's been the one thing that, thank God for things like Incarnate to make the maps, because it's kind of assets that I can use.
Oh, man.
But when I look at people's original characters online and I look at the art coming out of the community, every day I just look at that going, man, I want more of that. And those guys deserve the money they're getting, but it's just a little bit financially beyond me at the moment. And I find that tough, because you mentioned the source book and things for Elisaria, and I really want to pack that thing out with arts, but it's just expensive.
It is. I actually did want to get into your homebrew material. I really want to know about it. From your website, you have links and everything like that. But for the listeners, can you kind of break down what it is it all entails?
Sure. The big project, which has been worked on so far, is the World of Elisaria, which is in the show, is up as a PDF on the website to kind of pour through all the different cities and the history of the world. And that's being added to and changed as the seasons come out, because as I said, the players are developing what's happening. That's part of the larger world of Erienwell, which I'm writing at the moment. But the kind of ready-to-go stuff is... I've got a little cousin who's 12 and she loves D&D. And so she said, can you write an adventure that will play as the family? And the rest of my family are not geeks or nerds really at all. So I had to write something that was would appeal to the mass market. And so I kind of wrote this series of 10 puzzle rooms, essentially, that had this, what I call the amnesia narrative, that, for us geeks, we can just say, hey, we're going to play some D&D. And people go, cool. And they just roll a character. But because I had to pre-gen everything for everyone, trying to explain to someone what a cleric is or what a fighter was, I thought, well, rather than do that, let's just kind of give them one memory that they start the game with. And we'll use the old, we don't know why we're here or what we're doing. And then every time they solve the room, you get a new memory. Not each character, but one of the characters. And the idea is that they're all supposed to slightly mislead each other and make them slightly suspicious of why they're there, without kind of causing party grief, but just enough to kind of create a little bit of intrigue. And then I was just sat there one day, bored, looking at my, 18 hours worth of marking I had to do and 7 hours of editing I had to do on the show. And I thought, well, instead of doing that, I could just type all this up. So the ready out of the box, that's good to go. It's called The Night Before. It's on the DM's Guild, links from my website. I think it was only $4 I stuck it up for. It's 10 rooms that you can go, or 11 rooms you can tackle in any order, it doesn't matter. It's only a level 3 adventure, because again, it's planned for people who've not really played D&D before, but you can use it as a campaign one, kind of session one, how did the party meet, rather than we were in a tavern. And that's kind of a little thing. And the other thing I've done is I've just released my first subclass called the Ethereum Sage, which is a wizard who's a cross between the Aes Sedai from Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time, someone said a little bit of Doctor Who, and the idea is, like, I really like the chronology wizard that Matt Mercer's designed, and I really like the divination wizard, but what I wanted was a wizard that's kind of sitting between those two, kind of more towards the evocation wizard as well. I like the idea of a wizard who just reacts to things around them and kind of taps into the ether, the very stuff that reality is made from, and finds a way of manipulating it. So a lot of the abilities are based around the ability to literally cause air to become physical and manifest as a crystal shard as a defensive reaction. Or to, as the level 6 ability, you can, if you get really lucky with a D100 roll, you can change reality and get your spell slot back that you just used.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, a new cantrip as well, because Firebolt is rubbish, because nearly everything's fire resistance. So it's created a whole new school as well, called the School of Aether. And then the level nine spell's just insane. Essentially, you can attempt to cause your attempt to make your opponent cease to exist. It basically works a little bit like Power Word Kill, but just with a few more caveats and a little bit of flavor on there. But unlike Power Word Kill, it can absolutely backfire really horrendously, because something I really love in the third homebrew I've released, though that's in another need of an update, called Lost Items, I really like items that come with a cost. If you've read any Brandon Sanderson, he creates the most compelling magic systems for me, because they're not what I call the Superman thing of, hey, I'm overpowered and can do everything. He creates a world that, yes, you can use this magic. Yes, you will be able to do amazing things. But, and I think that's compelling to me as a narrative. So I've try to create items and spells that on first glance might look a little bit overpowered, but they always come with this huge cost. So the ability to get your spells back is obviously game breaking if it's used too much. So the kind of downside to that is, yeah, you get it 3 times per day at a certain level, but if you use it more than that, you gain a level of exhaustion every single time you use it. The level 9 spell, you have a chance of insta-killing an enemy. Obviously, DMs could be like, not big bosses, but every time you cast that spell, you get 3 levels of exhaustion.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so you've got to really think carefully, because if you cast it twice, you're dead. And I like things like that. I try and create things that are narratively compelling, rather than looking for, oh, there's a gap in the market and I could make some money. I don't expect to make money off this stuff. I just do it for fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think most of us do it for fun, but also it would be nice to kind of be able to get some money out of this. Yeah, let's not lie to ourselves here.
Hey, it really would. But you know what? There's a lot of creators out there who really need that money, especially in life where things happens. And I would absolutely say to listeners, you know, go to them first. I'm lucky enough that I've got a good day job. I'm doing what I do for fun, and you know, anything that comes my way just goes straight back into the show. Or at the moment, through series 2, I ran a whole thing that anything bought off my online store, all the money went to local homeless charities, because I'm not relying on it to live, and I just wanted to give something back to people who do need it.
I think it's absolutely necessary that, you know, we as people should definitely more often than not, or I would probably say should always, look out for each other. And definitely going to a place that hosts people's artwork, people's music, their writing, anything that you can pay for to have, I would say do it. You know, obviously, if you're tied up, hold off. But if you really do want to support people, do it. And it makes their day, it makes their life just so much better, because they know they have supporters who will, you know, love and cherish their work.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that listeners, please do check out, again, earthsembers.com, and just go through all that's on there. It is so good. It's a beautiful website. It's very simple, very clean, very easy to maneuver, but it definitely does give you everything you need.
That was the plan.
It's a good plan, executed beautifully. I may edit this question out later, because maybe it just doesn't belong in this interview.
Okay.
But it is something that I am curious about, because you are from the UK, an avid D&D player. You know, you have your own podcast, you do a lot of work for this. For my own inquiry, is D&D very prevalent in the UK, with it being obviously heavily based in the history, culture, and mythology and stuff like that?
Oh God, huge. It's massive. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Gary Gygax invented the game, but if we're honest, he did just rip Tolkien off mostly in the early days. And obviously Tolkien being an English professor in University of Oxford. So I think there's always been an appetite for it. I mean, my way in, as I said, as well as the podcasts, is I'm a video gamer, and I watched the Outside Xbox stuff over here, and they had a session where they said, we're going to do some D&D, and they got the guy who worked at the time at Eurogamer, now he helps run the Dicebreaker channel, Johnny Chiodini, who is just the most wonderful human being and the loveliest DM in the world. I kind of got into it through that as well, and then I just found this whole... It was like lifting up a rock that I hadn't known was there and just finding a hidden city. There's so many D&D podcasts, and there's meetups, there's tabletop conventions over here, and I've only really found out about it, say, in the last 18 months. I know the guys over at Billowing Hills, they do an awesome show as well. They're UK-based. There's so many of us over here, and we've all just been laughing and chatting on Twitter, saying we need to actually create a bit more of a formalized network.
I am also from a very small town, so I'm not trying to blame my ignorance on anything about that, but it definitely, I'm still learning about the world. I'm 28 years old. I'm still learning about things, how the world works and stuff.
Hey, aren't we all?
Which is a good thing. I think we should obviously, as humans, continually be learning about anything that we can. I have very few examples of my D&D exposure.
Well, I think it's, I think a lot of that's to do with, because obviously for us growing up in Britain in the 90s, American culture was everything to us. British culture was around with like Britpop and, you know, Brit rock and stuff in the 90s. But a lot of it was, we looked to America because it was big and shiny and exciting. And over the last kind of 15 years, I've been thinking about this stuff. And I think one of the fundamental differences is, at least to us, this is my perspective, that Americans are very, or seem very good at talking about things that you do well, whether that can be construed as arrogance in some people or just honesty and love of what you're doing from others. And I think that the British default is to not stick your neck out at all. If you say, hey, I think I'm good at this, people tend to cut you down pretty quickly. It doesn't actually come from a horrible place. I think it mostly comes from a joking place of trying to make sure people don't get too big for their britches. But right. I think that's had a damaging effect on the psyche. You know, we grew up in an era where we were taught that, you know, we'd done atrocious things to the entire world. We should be really ashamed of ourselves. And, you know, don't stick your neck out. The world hates you as a Briton. Don't, you know, don't be too loud. Don't be too grandiose in anything you do, because it's probably not that good anyway. And someone else is doing it better in America, so just stop. And I think that's just been really damaging on our psyche. Certainly for my generation, I'm 33 and the guys below me. And I just, there's no pride in ourselves. And I don't think kind of nationalistic pride is what I mean. I just mean just it's something in our culture has made us not like ourselves. And I think, or just not celebrate ourselves. And that's something really damning, because there's amazing British artists, amazing work coming on over here. Nothing to do with the fact we're British, just it's happening here. And I would love to see more British people being proud of their work. I think I've got to thank Kevin Smith again, because he said, look, if you don't talk yourself up and sell yourself, no one else is going to do it for you in life. So you might as well. And if everyone thinks you're an idiot, hey, at least you gave it a go. So I've tried to adapt that ethos myself.
But he definitely does hit them really on the head for every single one, though. But I would say I feel that what you're saying about, you know, don't stick your neck out.
Brave is the wrong word, because obviously, you know, some people hear brave and they go, you know, you're not going into a burning building, that's brave. But actually, bravery is overcoming all small obstacles personally. It's a personal bravery. Sticking a show out into the world and saying, hey, this is a part of me, is terrifying. I think especially in the digital age, it was a little bit easier when I released CDs in the early days of being a musician, because we never knew how many people bought them. And, you know, probably only 7. And that didn't matter, because no one was hurt. Whereas, you know, now you go on someone's website and or on Twitter and you see someone's got 24,000 followers and you think, God, they're really good. Oh, I've only got 400. I must be rubbish. And actually, it's not about that at all. It's about the work. And you know, did you have fun doing it? I think I said that earlier. And, you know, I've enjoyed your show. The one episode I've heard so far has been really great. I've subscribed and I'm looking forward to hearing more. And I think that's a good thing to do. I think people should be free to put themselves forward and say, hey, here's a thing I've done. I've always tried to take the position of I'm not pretending what I'm doing is right or perfect. It's just a thing. And I'm happy to learn. I'm happy to change. I'm happy to grow. And I think as long as we've got that collaborative mindset as a community, then we should be really proud of sharing each other's work.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to what I want for this podcast is to share others' work. I want to share what this community has with listeners in the community and outside the community. And not just, I'm more than happy to have fantastic DMs such as you and Tom from Dungeon Dads and Zoob, who is another one I have in an episode I have yet to release, though. But like, it's not just you who I want to have on here. I want to have the players. I want to have people who make dice. I want to have writers, actors.
Those guys are geniuses. How the hell do they make dice? That's wizardry.
But I want everyone, cosplayers, singers, everyone and everything to come on here and contribute wealth to the chest.
Absolutely. You know, that's my goal. I really liked that as a theory, as an idea, actually, when I heard that, I went, huh, I know, that's really nice. I like that because I think it's a lovely image.
Thank you.
And I think it's true. You know, those guys, every single person in the community is important. The people that just post up original art of their characters online and go, I don't know if I'm very good, but I've done this. And I think, you're amazing. Look at that. That's incredible.
Like, I can't do that. I have no bone in my body that can do that.
Sure.
You know, but they do. And it's fantastic. And I want to talk to them. This is a talk show. I want to talk to people, you know.
And I've got to mention her again, because I did mention her earlier, but especially people like Shannon as well, who in season 2 of my show on Paradise RPG, just the nicest person in D&D, as far as I'm concerned. She does so much to connect people, whether that's helping players join podcasts or helping people find dice. She's a teacher as well. You know, she does so much for her kids. And, you know, she's a really strong mental health advocate and equality advocate. And she's just such a lovely person. And just those people being out there being good people in the community, They deserve so much praise for what they do.
I could not agree with you more, especially in the world the way it is today. We definitely need that around us.
Yes.
It not only helps us physically in our day-to-day lives, but mentally too. People need that. And, you know, what you were saying about as Britons, you know, kind of like that don't stick your neck out, which is very damaging to the psyche, that I don't think those things should be around anymore, obviously. But it is a community like this that has helped people come out of from corners, from shells, you know, people being wallflowers. I myself owe a lot to D&D and other such games for helping me find a voice in my own life and Absolutely. In my own, you know, my existence, and it's good. And I think others should be like you, should be the teachers of people who are too scared or, you know, too cautious about coming out and being who they really are and giving things a shot, trying new things.
Oh God, if I can do it, I'm an idiot. Anyone can do it. You know, it's just do it.
That's what I'm thinking whenever, every time I start up an episode of this podcast, I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, like I got nothing to say. Like there's plenty of people doing this too. Like why am I any different? But I think it's an adventure. I think it's definitely something that people need to try.
And if it's fun, this is the other thing. Like I see this a lot in the day job and from years of being a musician is something art? What gives something worth argument?
Right.
And, you know, I'm on two sides of the fence here because as a musician, you know, learn your instrument, learn what makes something good, get good at what you do if you want to be serious and a professional about it. But equally, play banjo in the pub every Friday if that's fun for you. You know, I'm just kind of sick of gatekeepers saying what's good and what isn't. If you're having fun doing what you're doing and it's not harming another human being, then enjoy it. It doesn't matter if you're rubbish and just having a laugh. At the end of the day, quality is judged by other people. You can never judge it yourself. I'm sure that there are those that listen to the show, my show, and go, not for me. And that's all right. I mean, obviously they're wrong, but that's their choice.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's just something to do because I've enjoyed it, not because I say I'm setting out to be the new Matt Mercer. Because I think that's setting goals like that are just a way to instantly fail.
Yeah, you put too much expectations on your shoulders and you start to crumble.
Yes.
And with you know, you and I having this one man show, I mean, obviously you have other people on your show, but doing all the editing, doing the world building and stuff like that, you know, you are like Atlas in a way, holding the world up on your shoulders.
Oh, yes.
And
now, that's the bit I hate. That's what I would happily farm out is the... I'm getting it. I'm trying to do it really quickly. I'm so sorry. And just that's the tough bit, that when we're in the trenches and we're doing the work, it's really hard to just enjoy it because it can feel like a huge pressure when it should just be fun. But I don't know a single human being who's ever thought that editing audio is fun. I know some who claim that it is. I say that I will remind them of that when they're about 4 hours into trimming and putting noise gates on things. But... you know, I'm very envious of podcasts where they've got teams of people. Like, I'm rubbish at marketing. I'm rubbish at social media stuff, mainly because I have so little time, but also just because it's just not a strength of mine. And I'm very envious of people with teams. It's so hard. And I'm really in awe of people that do it well, because I think it's a really amazing skill.
It's putting yourself out there for, you know, people to, even though it's not as, or may not be seen as much of, like doing a podcast of like, hey guys, here's what I can do. You're still putting yourself out there. You're still saying like, hey, come look at this thing, you know, and it may just be very little, but still it's something that's tough to do. And me myself being, I'm a very closeted individual, and doing this podcast seems weird just for the mindset of like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
I view myself as a loner a lot of times, but like talking to people from all over the world is fascinating to me. Talking to people just in and of itself is fascinating. And I want to do that. It's something I have very much enjoyed with our talk right now, is fantastic. And it's terrifying, but also I'm learning. I am experiencing new things. And I think that's what, again, we as humans should strive to do in a regular basis.
I think you've struck gold with the idea, actually, because just the opportunity to talk to people is a really good thing. I certainly feel like I'd released, you know, yet another actual play show into a very saturated market. I'm not particularly worried about it sinking or swimming, because like I said, it's just fun for me. But I think having something where you can have such a diverse range of people on and just discuss stuff with them in a very personal way, I think there's loads of space for that in the TTRPG world. I think you've come up with a great idea here.
Well, thank you. I And again, I'm not trying to make it big. If it does, then, nice, you know, though, great. It would be nice, like we said. Let's not kid ourselves here. But again, and I've had discussions, and I'll say heated discussions with my brother about this, because he's been one who I've turned to starting this to be like, you know, what should I do? It's not like he knows any more than me about it, but definitely someone to, you know, bounce ideas off of, whatnot, and the like. It is something that is just a struggle with trying to make something and not getting a big head about it.
Yeah. I made a really big conscious effort to, because I know some shows are, and you know, well within their rights to be like, hey, we're up to 1,000 listeners. Hey, we're at 10,000 listeners and all those things. And I've made a really conscious decision to never share those metrics.
Smart.
Mostly because then if it's awful, no one will ever know. And I can still blag that I'm doing really well. But actually because that, I mean, I said, I spent years as a musician in the industry where it was, what are your social media numbers? How are you trending? And I hate that, because it did really get to a point where you couldn't walk up to a record company anymore and say, but I've got a really good song here. They'd say, we don't really care about that. How many fans have you got on MySpace? And that was just damning. And I worry about the same thing as the TTRPG world becomes a little bit more monetized and grows up a little, that I don't want that to sink in with people. So for me, I said, if one person is listening that's not me or the cast, I feel like I'm winning, because it means one person's absolutely hearing my dumb adventure. And if people enjoy it, great. If they don't, cool. I had fun and I got to be creative and wasn't just, you know, sit staring at the wall or doing washing up or something.
I would say I can't just sit around and do nothing a lot of times, even if it's playing video games, you know, it's fun. But like, I want to be creating something. I want to be doing something. Yes. You can get way over your head, man, with like we've just said, with like editing, yes, music, with the world. It's so much though, and it can be very intimidating. I want to lead into with this my last question a little bit here, because it can be very intimidating for people to experiencing new things, like we've talked about. For the last question for you, I would love for you to give some advice to people listening, or just people out there in the ether. What kind of advice would you give to people looking to get into D&D for their first time?
Do it. Do it badly. Learn. Improve. And that's the exact same advice I give to kids when I'm teaching them to write music. That I think something that certainly holds me back is looking at people who are good and going, I can't do that. No, you can't right now. You're inexperienced. But just do it, learn it. And then as you go along, you'll get better. And the better you get, the more fun you'll have. And then you'll figure out what way is right for you. Everyone looks at online shows and says, you know, I want to be like that. So, well, you can't be. You're not them. What have you got to say? Don't worry about it. Just do your thing. Some people like really crunchy games, rules heavy. That's all right. Mm-hmm. Some people, like me, I like really RP heavy, story heavy games, character driven stuff. That's equally fine. The most important thing is just try it. What can go wrong? Yeah. Like at the very worst thing, it's awful. But you know what? You still did it. Was it Ben Franklin who said, I didn't fail 300 times. I learned what not to do.
Great quote.
When talking about inventing the light bulb. And I think that I'm probably wrong. It's probably not Ben Franklin, but I like that methodology, that the only way we improve at anything is by doing it and forgiving ourselves. I use the analogy when I'm teaching kids. It's like riding a bike. No one looks at a bike and says, I'm just going to get on that and cycle perfectly. You know that the first time you go on, you're going to fall off. You're going to need your folks to hold the back of the bike for you, or to have stabilizers on, and gradually you'll get better and take that stuff off. So why do we, you know, look at a guitar and go, I tried it for an hour and I couldn't play it like Zeppelin. I'm rubbish. Why is it, you know, we try and DM or play the game like, I'm not Matt Mercer. After an hour, I'm rubbish. I should give up. Like, that's such a crazy mindset. And so, like, the thing I'm always trying to teach my students, and I would say to anyone who is interested in doing anything creative, is let yourself fail and have fun. You will get better. Yeah. It is a process. It's not a result.
Yeah, you got to just take that leap.
Yeah.
And learn from it.
And actually, I think something that does come from looking from being British is we really don't mind looking stupid. It's fine. Like a lot of our comedies, like Only Fools and Horses, you know, are really centered on, you don't mind looking an absolute plum. It's part of who we are. So just feel a bit silly. It's great.
And that's definitely something that D&D allows you to do.
Yes.
Well,
yeah, there you is a joke among them, my cast there. I mean, not so much in season 2, because the guys were far too polite, but in season 1 and certainly my home games, that I'm legendarily bad at accents. I never remember them. Literally the same character from like 10 minutes ago, it's gone. I've got it written down in front of me, the accent. I just can't get back into it. And but that's fine, because I'm not a character actor, so I don't put that pressure on myself that I should be good. I'd like to be. Yeah. I hope I'm improving. But I think it's absolutely fine to be rubbish. If you are rubbish, lean into it and have fun with it.
Couldn't agree with you more. Well, that about wraps up the questions I have for you, sir. Could you please tell the listeners, which I hope they've been paying attention, for one, go check out earthsembers.com, if we haven't said that enough. But when and where can people catch your show?
Seasons 1 and 2 are all out. They're completed. They are 10 episodes long, or season 1's 10, season 2's 9. They can find them at www.earthsembers.com. On iTunes, on Spotify, on Deezer, on Google Podcasts, on literally all the other places that podcasts are stored.
I will be putting plenty of info in the description for everyone, but thank you so much for joining me today, Johnny.
Oh, it's been
absolutely pleasurable. You are a wonderful person to talk to. Listeners, thank you for joining us, and I'll see you the next time you open the Ironbound chest.